Danilana Kitchen talks about food. Danilana Kitchen talks recipes. Danilana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Danilana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We gather here around our kitchen table to talk about food, farming advice, recipes, and opinions. And we are here at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in downtown Ames, Iowa. We're glad to be here, and we're glad that you've joined us around our kitchen table. Well, it's summer. So many vegetables, so little time, Donna.
And fruits. Oh, my goodness.
And fruits. Here it comes. Well, it has been coming. And it's such a joy to taste all this fresh stuff. And I also want to mention that I have been availing myself of ice cream. I think we talked during the week, we mentioned, you said, there's no such thing as too much ice cream, and I certainly agree, Donna.
Oh, absolutely.
Definitely.
And when it's 90 degrees out, your thoughts run to ice cream.
Thoughts run to ice cream. And I have a little shout out to a little ice cream shop on Main Street in Ames, Iowa called Marmalade Moon. Sometimes when the show is done late in the afternoon, when I'm all done putting the show to bed, as they say, I go down and have myself a sweet spot. I like their ice cream. Marmalade Moon, actually, they make it themselves. Yes, yeah, they have an ice cream called Marmalade Moon, and I like the marmalade. It's got marmalade-ish sort of.
So right. I tried it. It's very sweet.
It is. It's lovely. I've been trying to broaden my horizons. I've been having some different flavors. But three cheers for ice cream.
Well, and we have the chocolate store has gelato, which they make themselves, too. So we have a lot of good ice cream on Main Street.
Right. So kind of go between. One back and forth between Marmalade Moon and Chocolatery Stom. It'll help you get through.
And visit both of them in one evening.
You could, yeah, walk up and down Main Street. Yeah, yeah. Well, you don't have to get a three scooper. You can just get a one scooper. And yeah.
I was just reading David Leibowitz's Perfect Scoop, which is a really good book for homemade ice cream makers, right? And he was, so he is an American chef, but he has been living in Paris for the, I don't know, past 15 years or something. But he says in the book, he said, you can do it the French way of having just one scoop.
Yeah, I like that.
And eat it slowly.
Yeah, I do. I don't eat lots, but I do like it. Was something about walking in a nice summer night up and down Main Street or wherever with an ice cream cone. I like it. And I'm kind of glad our president made that okay. I mean, we saw
his ice cream thing. Yeah.
Yeah. People people have forgotten how to enjoy ice cream. That's a pretty sad thing there.
Yeah, Donna. And the cone and dribbling down.
The
your
dribbling
arm.
Is part
we
of
love
it.
That. We love that.
That's good. Well, you went to the Ames Farmers Market this last week, and what'd you find, Donna?
Oh golly. Well, okay. Watermelons are in, but the muskmelons are not yet. I'm still waiting for that. Mm-hmm. So we still have things to look forward to. The first apples were here.
Okay.
Let's see.
Yeah.
What did I get? Paula Red? Is that what it's called?
Oh, that'd be an early apple.
Yeah, it's an early apple. It's nice and tart, and I really like that. Of course, I got some corn. There's a lot of corn at the market. I think Ray Olson gave me a variety. I think he called it Americana. That was so tender. Of course, it was sweet and wonderful too. But it was also the texture was absolutely fabulous. And tomatillos.
Oh, they're here.
Yeah,
they're here.
Yeah. What's her farm's name? Kate's farm's name?
Root to Rise.
She had tomatillos. Now, I love tomatillos, and she sells a good sized bag, like a. Well, not quite basketball size, but, you know, smaller than that. Maybe volleyball size or something. Anyway, she sells them. And what I like to do with them is just split them. You have to husk them, right? Because they're in that family. You pull the little papers off the outsides and cut them in half and spray a baking sheet with a little oil, and then I just put them cut side up and a little salt and pepper and roast them and let them get soft. And then you can chop them into salsas or whatever you want. But, you know, they have that wonderful lemony tang, and, you know, we just don't get enough tomatillas around here. So that was really... Oh, and several people, including Kate, had... what are those little peppers that we like so much? The little green... Shishitos! Shishitos, yes. So they're look prolific. And since several vendors found them, I thought, oh, they're catching on. Finally, people are getting, you know, they're great on the grill, or even a little quick pan sear on them is, I mean, you can eat them raw too, but, you know, they're small.
They're green, right?
They're green. Yeah, yeah. They don't get red. And we were talking about somebody who raised them, and normally they're not hot. But even on the same bush, I think they said 1 in 20 can turn out to be hot.
I've heard
have a little
that
heat.
It's nice to have
surprise!
A little danger with your dinner. I've had that happen too.
And grilling a few, they make nice garnishes on top of all kinds of things, like even if you're having hamburgers or a steak with a couple of grilled shishitos on top, you know, it's...
Yeah, peppers are, well...
Peppers are coming, yeah.
And they're good. Peppers is just lovely. We're just lovely. There's the Ames Farmers Market. 2 weeks ago, I went to the Valley Junction Market in Des Moines, and I haven't been there in ages.
Yeah.
And, which is, it's a wonderful little old downtown that has never really given up the ghost. Valley Junction is a great little community, lots of little storefronts and lots of things to visit. One thing I don't like about some farmers markets, and this is, I found it there too, lots of food trucks. And the food was wonderful. Of course, I had to try a few things. It was good. But I don't like the noise of all the generators and the food trucks, but it's worth it. You just walk up and down and try things, and it's good.
Well, you know, food trucks are so popular that it's a draw for you know, people don't seem to be able to go to farmers markets to buy vegetables, so they got to have a reason to go. And then they might buy a few... peppers or something,
Yeah, like the food trucks definitely outnumber the vegetable growers, but and the crafters, and they always have a big music event in the old train station down in Valley Junction. And I'm glad I went. It was a nice night. And also,
what night is that on?
It's on Thursday evenings, okay. Is it like from 5 to 8 or 4 to 8 or something like late afternoon?
Dinner time.
That's why there's lots of food trucks. It's a fine place to walk up and down. I enjoyed it. So that's Valley Junction Market. And a couple weeks ago, two months ago, we talked to two young women, Willa Colville and Megan Bird, who were just kind of dipping their toes into starting a farmer's market here in a neighborhood here
in the
Ames.
Northwest side of town,
they started the Reliable Street Market. And I went, now that's Friday evening from 5 on, and I don't know
if it's not one, every Friday.
No, this was kind of their testing year, and so I think this maybe be the last one. Reliable Street Market, you can look that up. But there was Friday evening, nice evening, and there's a community garden there. People get to know the community garden. They were actually giving food away from the community garden, and of course you could give a donation if you like. We didn't have to. A lot of interesting vendors, crafters. Beth Wilbur was there with her honey, and they had giving away a free meal to the neighborhood, so you could get
Wilbur was there with, when you said honey, I thought you meant she had a new boyfriend. Now I realize, no, she's selling honey. Right, great. Okay, go Beth, right.
Thank you, Dad. Well, it was nice, and it's a fine place to gather. It's Northwest Ames in the Ontario community, Ontario is a street up there, and the old grain elevator is there.
Well, and you know, fortunately, over the last 20 or 30 years, almost every community now has a farmer's market. So it is, and this is the time of year to go. I mean, I've seen local produce even in the, like the Fairway has, I mean, actually, if you were a grocery store in Iowa, you'd be crazy not to be selling Iowa sweet corn. But even the Fairway, I found really nice looking local watermelons. Get yourself some local produce, especially find a good tomato. Because once you eat fresh, in-season food that has not been trucked in from California or Florida, and I know there are many times of the year where that's what we have to eat, but right now is not that time, and the flavor is so good for you to taste, to educate your palate, to make your tongue dance and sing, and, you know, just get out to a farmer's market, find some local produce, because now for the next 2 months is all the good stuff is here.
All the good stuff.
All the good stuff.
And there's a lot of ways to put up things for the winter and do that too.
Stretch it out. That's fine.
I planted, Donna, I planted less tomatoes this time. So I'm not, I don't have like
barrels. Folks, she only planted 15 varieties this year.
As opposed to
30.
30.
Yeah.
See, I'm cutting back. But still, I've got this one great long row. And because we've had interesting weather, we've had hot and dry and hot and humid. And now today is cold and cool.
Well, 20 degrees difference between today and yesterday.
I know all those tomatoes are confused. So they seem to be, they're ripening just fine, but actually it suits me very well. They're not coming
on. Slow down a little bit.
They're not coming on gangbusters. I have already done one double batch of oven candied tomatoes recipe on the Donna Lana Kitchen website. So, you know, I'm starting putting things, and I put away beans, freezing okra, and I got some corn and froze some corn. So it's one nice thing about the change in the weather. When it kind of cools off and it's not blistering hot, it's put something in the freezer or can something or put it away for winter.
I mean, it's only early August, but with the temperature drop, all of a sudden, it does make you realize, oh, we have mostly barreled through summer and we're at the latter end of it. You know, it's autumnal things are coming, right?
And it's a good time to save herbs, because I went to an herb workshop, and I dry them. I went to an herb workshop, a woman that really did it up big, and she said the best time to pick herbs for drying is yesterday, she said, because things go really fast in the summertime, and especially a good time to pick almost any herb. I mean, it's a plant. It wants to put up a flower. As soon as the flowers start, and not bloom, but just start budding, that is when the essential oils are the absolute best. For basil, for mint, for oregano, for thyme. They put up flowers, and you don't want to wait till the flowers are blooming extremely
much. Right, because all the energy goes in towards the seeds that point. Yeah.
So you can deadhead, which I do like the word, deadhead things by keeping those flowers pinched off. But still, now is the time to grab those herbs and put them in.
Well, and there's so many, like you use your dehydrator to...
I use a dehydrator.
Me, yeah. I actually cut open paper grocery bags, brown bags, spread them on the dining room table, and loosely lay the branches out. You know, you want to give them plenty of air and let them self-dry. There's nothing easier. Also, sometimes you can tie them in small bunches and hang them, like I have them hanging from the curtain rods in my kitchen and stuff.
If you don't have countertops or tables to spare, or how do you keep your cat off the table when the herbs are there? I mean, mine would be up there at least kind of spreading things around.
Well, she gets her corner where her food is, so the dog doesn't get it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, we make concessions, but yeah.
Gotta watch that. So I've been drying, well, lovage, and I have a couple mints that I've just finished drying, and basil, too. And Donna turned me on to this, the Thai basil. It dries well.
I don't know why it's
tasty.
It's important to dry it because you cannot buy it. And you won't have any if you want to cook Asian food.
Right.
So drying your own, I especially try to dry the things that you can't just buy, which are like lemon verbena, anise hyssop, certainly a rose geranium. I dry some basil too because the basil that you dry is usually has a better, stronger flavor.
Yeah, yeah.
Now for drying, remember, try to leave the leaves as whole as you can. And once they're dry, put them in a jar with a tight lid. Because when you're ready to cook with them, if you crush them, the dried ones, just before you cook them, they will still have more of their volatile oils intact. So
it does make a difference.
Yeah. Yes. Like if you're buying, you know, the usual grocery store herbs, they're what's called cut and sifted, which means
dust.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. They've lost a lot of their flavor already, which is a good reason to dry your own basil, actually.
Yeah, yes.
Even though you can buy it. Yeah.
You notice it a lot with basil.
It's really nice to
have it.
And
chunky.
Are you drying lemon basil? That's another one you can't buy.
I have it because my lemon basil was under a tomato plant, and it's not as far along as the rest of them.
Another
one of those very tender vegetables or tender herbs. That lemon basil, I find, it smells wonderful, but I have a hard time. Of all the basils, it seems to be my most persnickety. I've got some.
Well, and there is the thing I did last year with thyme. The lemon thyme, where I packed it with coarse salt.
Oh, that's right.
That turned out to work very well and lasted me almost all winter.
Oh, really? Talk about that.
Well, thyme, you know how tiny the leaves are, right?
Tiny.
So you pick a bunch of it, and you do have to strip it off of the twigs, you know, because that's not the part you want to eat. So you get a pile of leaves, and it's tiny. And I usually take like a 2-cup mason jar and fill it with, you know, flaky kind of coarse salt and mix kind of visually equal parts of salt and thyme. And the salt preserves, and I do keep it in the refrigerator too, so that when I want to cook with thyme, obviously you put it in a recipe and leave it because it's coming with the salt too. So you have to account for that, but it actually does preserve the flavor fairly well. You know, like lemon thyme it's quite delicate.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's another good preservation technique for thyme. And sage is the brown butter one. I like to fry the sage leaves in butter till it turns quite dark and then put that in a jar. And that will keep for all winter. You use some of it that way.
Of all things, I usually do hang up sage. I usually have enough of it that it's just kind of pretty to hang in the kitchen. A sprig or two of sage. And long about Thanksgiving, you're going to wonder where
you're going to need some sage, you know. Yep, yep.
We are creatures of habit, and I'm glad we are. Yes.
Well, yeah, because over the years we've developed, I mean, if something doesn't work, you don't repeat it. But if it works well, you just keep doing it. Oh, I mean, like, I think I would panic if I didn't have a good supply of lovage for the winter.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. You just love the lovage, right?
And that does dry pretty well. Again, leave it chunky. Leave it. And it's plenty. A little later in the show, we'll talk about another lovage recipe. But we'll save that for later so you keep your ear to the radio. Don't miss out on that. That's good. Mint.
Another good thing to dry.
I used to be really fussy and dry all my, my mint varieties separately. But I put it all together. I use it a lot for teas and tea in the winter, and I just put it all together.
Well, it is a Middle Eastern tradition to cook with mint, and mm-hmm. we often forget that mint can be used a lot like basil.
Yes.
Or with basil, even.
Yes, yes.
we're kind of stuck in the mint sweet department, but mint is wonderful without the sweet too.
Right, right. So I've got my mint stashed away. I've got my basil stashed away, except for my lemon basil, and more to come. More to come. Donna, you have a news item.
It's kind of old news, but I did read today a Chicago Tribune article about, of course, dicamba and the, you know, we're still using that stuff.
And I'm surprised we're still using it. Yeah. Or I'm surprised they haven't, like, changed the name.
It is. They're trying to outlaw it, but they keep saying, oh, no, we can't go without it. What are we going to do? You know, because, you know, the weeds have evolved and hardly anything will work anymore. But this article, it talks about, you know, because dicamba, which is pretty toxic, notoriously travels. And does not stay where they spray it. So what they're seeing is, it's called cupping in the leaves. So this article was about a multi-year study in public forests looking at particularly at old, I think it was oak trees, but some of the really big oak trees, you know.
Uh-oh.
And they don't die immediately, but they do get damaged and their, you know, their leaf cover starts to get thinner, and of course this goes everywhere. You know, people who are, you know, live surrounded by cornfields and things like that particularly suffer because of the drift. And you know, it's obviously not healthy. It drifts everywhere, and the cumulative damage to some of the older forested areas is becoming more obvious, let's say. And they were just talking about the testing that they're documenting this, you know, and it's really problematic. And every year they think, okay, this will be the last year that they're going to be allowed to use dicamba, and then they find some other excuse to extend the use of it because they can't. Farmers are so used to using herbicides at this point that you know, we're going to have to relearn to farm or something, I guess. And the article ended with a quote from a guy named Bill Fries, who is the science policy analyst at the Center for Food Safety, which is a nonprofit group that has repeatedly petitioned and sued, they're a big deal, the EPA to reverse the decisions on dicamba. But here's the quote from Bill Fries. He says, "The way big ag operates today just isn't sustainable. Making these herbicide-resistant crops has been a cash cow for chemical companies without any regard for the long-term welfare of farmers, creating deep divisions in rural America. As a weed scientist once told me, what's happening now is unlike anything we've ever seen in the modern era of agriculture." So, you know, I mean, this is from Illinois, but it's certainly true in Iowa as well. And, you know, just because you look around and see these big old trees looking green and regal, right, doesn't mean they're not having cumulative damage, as we all are having cumulative damage. And I realized myself that I don't exactly know. There are specific signs you can see when plants are, you know, they don't all shrivel up and die immediately, but there's this thing called cupping, which I'm imagining is the leaves kind of turning up a little more or something. You know, anyway, we could all educate ourselves a little bit more to look for these kinds of things. Not that we can do much about it, but it's
pressure's got to come from somebody, and I don't know. The oak trees aren't going to up and sue the companies.
Exactly.
But they can't
vote.
That sometimes is what it takes.
Yeah, so I just a little downer reminder that these issues are ongoing and, you know, it's part of, and these products are carcinogenic probably is what they say. Who knows? You know, can't prove it. But, you know, we do now know that Iowa has the fastest rising cancer rates of any state in the country. Hello. So this affects all of us. So,
a little bit of news from the Donna Kitchen News Department. You're listening to KHOI, and this is Donalena Kitchen, Tasty Radio for the Heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donalena Kitchen. We're talking about stuff fresh from the garden today. So many vegetables, so little time, Donna.
It's okay. I always say, especially this is good dietary advice, there's no such thing as too many vegetables.
Or ice cream.
But that might not be true.
Okay, but we're talking but vegetables.
Yeah,
okay.
Vegetables are always good for you.
Good. Let's talk about more fresh stuff. I do grow eggplants, and I'm not really an eggplant aficionado, but I do grow them. And my eggplants tend to be, kind of reasonable size, small little things. Some of them are the long, skinny Asian eggplants, and some are kind of the teardrop-shaped. But we were given an eggplant a couple days ago that it's the size of a football, Donna. What do I do with this thing?
Well, it's less difficult than if somebody gave you a zucchini that size, okay?
Thank you. Yes.
Because the eggplant still has flavor when they get large. Is it the deep purple kind?
It's a deep purple.
And eggplants do come in colors.
Yes.
Beautiful. Oh, yes. I love the white ones. They're called Rosso Bianco or
that.
So those will be coming soon. So eggplants, every place you look, the recipes, slice and salt the eggplant and let it sit for 15 minutes and then pat it dry and all of which is true if you are doing things like frying eggplant for eggplant parmesan or something like that, And there are reasons. It says it pulls the bitterness out, and I don't find...
I never find them bitter.
Yeah, no. Although there are eggplants, particularly like in Indian food, some of them are extremely bitter, and they're usually small, and they could be yellow or whatever. There are varieties that are specifically, but these big purple guys are usually not that bitter. So I tend to just... I'm very... unfussy about these things. Ratatouille is the famous French vegetable stew, which has zucchini, peppers, and eggplant, all of which is what you're eating right now with garlic and not a lot of garlic, but some onions, basil, tomato. Now, when I make ratatouille, I actually use canned tomatoes because you don't want it heavily tomato. And I don't, at this point... The heirloom tomatoes are too precious for me to be cooking with them, right? So anyway, I just use a little tin tomato, enough to make it pink. But I just cut all the vegetables up and throw them into the pot and kind of stew them away. Now, the classic way to make it is you cook the zucchini one way and then you do the eggplant separately, and then you and then you combine them all at the end, which is absolutely delicious. But for a quick summer meal, just to put them all in the pot with a little liquid, either tomato and or a little water, and steam them down, and it's perfectly fine.
Good.
No fuss, no muss.
Do I leave the purple skin on the eggplant?
I do.
Sounds good.
I do. Oh, and the other thing that's really easy to do is roasting the eggplants. First of all, Small warning, never stick the whole eggplant in the oven without at least piercing it, because they will explode. And it's
That sounds fun.
It's really messy. Can be. But even to slice the eggplant in half or quarters, and, you know, if put a little olive oil on it, and maybe some basil or something, but salt and pepper, and roasting it is really good. And cooking them over. Okay, this is the wonderful thing to do if you really have a lot of eggplants. And we've done this with Paula and Gio, is you roast them over a grill, right? And get them really soft and mushy. And then you scoop them out of the skins and you make, what's the eggplant dip? Baba ganoush. There you go. With some, you know, lemon and garlic and stuff like that, which also freezes very well.
Thank
so those big eggplants are really good for baba ganoush, because you get a lot of the goop out of the center of the eggplant.
Oh, good
But
idea.
You need more than one.
Good idea.
So
good
you
idea.
You can roast them over the grill, which gives a nice smoky flavor. You can do it in the oven, too, if you want.
Oh, so now I know what to do with my football
salad. Yeah, eggplants are easy. They're very forgiving. There's a Japanese way I had once at a restaurant where it was the long, skinny kind. They were split in half. They were roasted in the oven with a mixture of miso and mayonnaise on them, which kind of cooks in and caramelizes down.
Oh, it's cooked with that on it.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Well, you don't, not a huge eggplant.
Yeah.
But, you know, something that will cook relatively quickly.
Something to do with my smaller eggplants.
That's
coming
right.
From the garden. Yes, yes. And another thing I've got in my garden right now, and it's finally coming into its own, my okra is doing good.
Lana is known for her okra.
I love it. It's coming. And I dipped into the Donna Lana Kitchen Archive for a show that we did in 2020, in February of all things, because I ran across a really good book. And so let's hear that show about okra, an okra book. I recently read a great book. It's called The Whole Okra, A Seed to Stem Celebration by Chris Smith. And yes, it is seed to stem. You all think of okra as those little pods that you either love or hate. But this
They're
guy,
awfully cute.
Yeah. But this guy celebrates the whole okra, from eating the greens to the top and the bottom, and making, oh, heaven knows.
Oh, the greens as well.
Oh, he can do anything with them. Anyway, I read The Whole Okra, A Seed to Stem Celebration. I found him to be a really fun, he's a funny person, engaging writer, a fellow gardener, okra lover, and he's a culinary explorer. He kind of tried all this stuff out. Chris Smith is originally from England, and this seems kind of unlikely as a beginning for an okra enthusiast, but he fell in love with it. He lives in the United States now with his family. He lives in North Carolina and works with Sow Truth Seeds in Asheville, North Carolina, and is the executive director of the Utopian Seed Project. So he's got lots of different okras
with. Okra has traditionally been a southern dish.
Yes, it has. And what's amazing about it, it has lots of different possibilities. He talks not only about eating the okra pod, but okra's uses in cosmetics, as a thickener and emollient, as a tasty
right,
green.
It's what we call that slimy thing that some people don't like. You know, it's a, what's that word, mucilaginic or something like that?
Yeah. And he eats the greens. He uses it, or is people are actually looking at this as a fiber for paper and cordage, and the use of okra seed for oil, flour, tofu, and tempeh.
Oh, the seeds! My goodness, that would be.
But when you think of it, we use a quinoa seed. We use, you know, all those.
Yeah, but
seeds.
That's a grain.
Yeah. Anyway, but like I said, he works for.
So
his,
I guess
his
you would
place.
Let the okra get rather large, and then the outside could be the fiber, and then the seeds. Waste not, want not.
Yeah, I save okra seeds. Pretty easy to do. As we look for resilient and sustainable crops to address our changing climate, okra just may be worth some consideration. It is really a widely adapted plant. It's grown all over the world. It's classified as Abelmoschus esculentus, the genus name from the Arabic meaning father of musk, refers to the scent of the seeds. And esculentus means succulent. okra is a member of the mallow family, Malvaceae, which includes, get this, cotton, cocoa, balsa wood, and hibiscus. This opens up a world of possibilities when you think of how many useful characteristics of this family of plant. And even if you don't grow okra to eat, grow it for the flowers. It's so pretty.
It's because they're in. Yeah. It's like mallow flowers. Yeah.
It's. As you mentioned, Donna, the author does a fine job addressing what he calls the S word, slime.
Slimy.
He calls the okra's reputation as a disdained and slimy vegetable extremely unjust. Yes. Here in the United States, there seems to be a great north-south divide. We either love it or hate it. I've been growing and selling okra for many years at the Ames Farmers Market here in central Iowa. I've heard all sorts of opinions about this vegetable. Oh, you either love it or hate it. Everybody has an opinion about okra. And for some reason, okra brings out passions and opinions that you don't find, say, with a carrot or a potato. You just don't have much of an opinion about that. But okra, oh boy, I hear some stories. This author has a fine sense of humor in this book, The Whole Okra. At horticultural gatherings and trade shows, he walks around with a sign that says, "Talk to me about okra," and gets all manner of culinary, garden, scientific, and historical information. So The Whole Okra is a great gathering of facts. And he's got recipes, fried okra, bindi masala, recipes for okra pickles, okra seed, pancakes and breads, okra greens, kimchi, raw okra salad. I'm going to try that. And
get this.
And okra marshmallow delights. Remember, okra is a member of the mallow family.
Huh? Well, okra marshmallow.
Huh? It's interesting. The guy is good. Plus, he also is, in the true gardener tradition, he has field tested,
Varieties?
Oh, varieties.
There's a lot of them,
there's
huh?
like maybe 150 here. Who would have thought? But it's widely adapted. People
now, does that mean you're going to grow different varieties this summer? Got you going, huh?
I'm already looking into... I always grow... most people grow. It's called Clemson Spineless because sometimes the okra pods have little hairs on them. Clemson Spineless doesn't, so it's a real popular garden variety.
And pick them little,
pick
right?
Them little,
pick
yeah,
them little.
Yeah.
Kind of like
I'm
the
trying,
zucchini
I'm trying
motto.
Some new ones. They come in white, light green. They come in red, burgundy.
The picture on the cover of the book is, it's a red book.
It's a red book.
But the okra on the photograph are beautiful red.
Yes. So there's lots of new things to learn about okra. Oh, I'm going to try some new varieties. And he has lots of different really interesting recipes in here. There's something called Limpin' Susan, which is the okra version of Hoppin' John. The idea of Hoppin' John is usually black-eyed peas.
Mm-hmm.
But this is okra and... okra and ginger and pepper and garlic.
Ooh.
And shrimp.
Oh, yeah, very southern.
Yep. Susan. Yep. And okra marshmallow delights.
Okay, tell me what that one is.
2 cups sliced fresh okra, 1 cup water, 1/2 cup honey, 2 tablespoons vanilla, 1/2 cup cashews. That's to roll these things in later. You blend the okra, honey, vanilla in a blender until it creams. Then you pour the mixture into a dehydrator and dry it until it's kind of sticky. Cut it and roll it into little balls. And it's sticky, it's sweet, and then you can use the powdered dry cashews as a covering of it. And no, it's not white, but it's dark colored. And that's where that slime comes in, folks.
Oh, Lana, I hope you'll try that in your experiments.
Well, it's
You're
good.
A good dehydrator, so.
I've got a dehydrator. We'll try. I am inspired thanks to Chris Smith. The book is called The Whole Okra, A Seed to Stem Celebration. Ah, yes. That was a fine book, and I've referred to it many times. Okra. I do like okra. My favorite way is just to fry the stuff. I don't bread it. I don't do anything. I just pick it small, fry it with onions, garlic. It's all good, Dana.
Well, and you can do it in a gumbo, which is kind of like a little okra stew, almost the same way you would do ratatouille, you know? Right. A little tomato, a little pepper, a little onion. It's kind of Cajun-ish.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's good. You're listening to KHOI. Find out more at khoifm.org. There's lots of good stuff there. Donna, tell folks about our podcast.
Oh, right. So the content of the radio show is a podcast which you can listen to any place you listen to podcasts. Just put in Donna Lana, which is one word, D-O-N-N-A-L-O-N-N-A, second word, kitchen, and there it will be.
Good. Thanks for your support. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You know, this is summer. We've got all this stuff coming from the garden, and it's also the time when we get ready for picnics and potlucks, and it somebody always brings, and they well should, a vegetable plate. Just chop up those carrots and peppers and zucchini. And now, heaven forbid, you could probably go and buy your little tub of French onion dip, which, you know, something to do. It's handy.
It's easy.
Handy.
You just buy it, right?
It's handy, but there's a lot of things that you can have with your vegetables. And consider this. We've talked about lovage before. And Donna and I have been bitten
by the lovage
bug. You have
to grow it. You can't buy it, yeah. Right?
But it's this lovely, tall, it looks like a huge, huge parsley plant, flat leaf parsley, but it can get up to like, 3 feet tall if you let her go.
And you just have to plant it once. It comes back every year. It's often the last plant in the garden in the fall and the first one in the spring. It's really easy to grow as long as you have sun.
So I ran across a recipe for lovage sauce. And you can use it as a dip. You can put it on sandwiches. It's sort of a mayonnaise-y thing. But if you like the taste of lovage, and one should like the taste of lovage, it's good. You blend this stuff up, and especially for a plate of crunchy vegetables, it's a good dip. So think we're talking summer vegetable dips here. Let's try something brand new. Evidently, lovage is a very, very old herb. It's been referred to over the years, along with some herbs that nobody ever hears of anymore. Some of them have gone extinct. Have you ever heard of smallage? There's something called smallage.
No, I haven't, actually.
I have heard of it, but I have never tasted it. And things like astafida.
Oh, that's still
around.
That's a big deal in Indian cooking, and it's very interesting stuff.
There's something called, that in old recipe books, silphium, but it's believed to be extinct. So let's not let this stuff go extinct. Let's try this stuff. It's good. I got this.
It's very celery-like flavor.
Very celery. If you like the celery taste, and lovage is handy for lots of things. But read out the recipe, Donna.
Okay.
This is what I did last night.
So the recipe, it's basically kind of a thin mayonnaise with lots of lemon. So he uses 2 ounces of fresh lovage leaves, 1 large egg yolk, a quarter cup of water, quarter cup of lemon juice, salt, a tablespoon of Dijon mustard, and 1.5 cups of mild salad oil. But the trick with the lovage is to take the lovage and quickly blanch it in boiling water and then pat it dry and then chop it up because it's a little tough sometimes, though.
Yeah.
So it's not like basil. It's not that delicate. So to blanch it first and then you can blend it in and it comes out really creamy. But He says in it, he calls it the ultimate condiment, right? He says, when I serve it at an event, one person pulled me aside to tell me it was God's own creation. And he said, it's hard to convey in words how it tastes. Sort of celery flavor, so potent. And he says, it's like green electricity.
Well,
whatever. I don't know what electricity tastes like.
But... Well, we love it. And it is a very green thing. I think on a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich is kind of your mayonnaise.
I use it like potato salads and things. That, you know, I'll put in lovage along with the basil, and then you don't have to chop the celery in, you know?
Yes, lovage has a good vegetal flavor. It is vegetal, yes.
Yes.
And it can be pretty wonderfully strong. The 2 ounces of lovage, consider it a big handful. I mean, I do have a kitchen scale, but I cook on with the quantity of some. So some, I did grab a big bunch of it, and yes, it was about 3 ounces as opposed to 2.
Well, and that's quite a lot of lovage because it's strong.
It's strong.
I use it a lot in anything I put tomatoes in. I'll put a little bit of lovage in. It goes very well with tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Like I make a classic cream of tomato soup, just like Campbell's, only better, using canned tomatoes. And the main difference is I put a little bit of lovage in it. And you can overdo the lovage. It's not like sweet basil or something. So you need to go. So Lana has made this recipe here, and we are tasting it on some crudités, and it really is good.
Yes, my little crudité batch that I brought in, mm-hmm. in the ever decorative baggie. I didn't put them on the plate. We have some zucchini. We have a sweet red pepper, and I put in some okra. I like okra raw, so I'm dipping my little okras in there.
Well, and of course, she picks them really small, so they're tender. So, snap, crunch. Oh, it's really, the okra, which has that tiny little bitterness of mm-hmm. okra, it's really good with the lovage.
Well, I like this lovage sauce.
Well, did you say green electricity? Here we go.
Well, I looked at that. The recipe looks like it's a fuss, but it's not a fuss except for just blanching the okra and mixing everything together. So
blanching the lovage, yeah.
But okra.
Because if you don't blanch it, it won't blend into the mayonnaise properly.
Right. Now, of course, there's pictures in the recipe book, and the picture of his product here with the lovage sauce was very creamy. I still have little specks.
Specks. I would bet that he blanched his a little bit longer than
Made it
softer. So,
but
it would...
just says a few 2 seconds or a couple half.
We don't count very
no.
well. We just kind of do it.
It says blanch it a few seconds, and I counted 1 potato, 2 potato. So I guess I could blanch it more. But
okay, there's also the possibility that his lovage was younger. You know, because lovage, the older, and we're later in the season, mm-hmm. it does get tougher as it grows. Or you can pick the newer shoots.
This time of year, I did take off, it has bolted already. So yeah. I have cut it back, and this is the new growth. Mm-hmm. But there were still some harder stuff out there. Lovage, one of our favorite things.
Lovage, right?
Lovage sauce. Mm-hmm. Lovage sauce. It's good. It's kind of be my new mayonnaise. I like mayonnaise-ish sort of things, but this is better. It's got the electric taste.
Yeah, we could call this instead of aioli, which is the garlic mayonnaise, you could be using this on your grilled cheese sandwiches or your BLTs or mm-hmm. whatnot.
Good. Well, there it is. Oh, Donna, you had a fortuitous find in your pantry this past week.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, well, you know, this time of year, you actually start going through the pantry and cleaning out the freezer to make room for all of the new stuff. And I found some jars of liquids with things in them and, you know, cryptic notes written on top of them. And I pull out this one of these large jars, you know, like holds a gallon, glass jar, and it's got nothing on it. It's dark brown. It's got nothing on it except a date, and the date was 2021, you know, so it's a few years. Obviously, I do not remember what I have done. So I open it up, I sniff it, and I went, oh my goodness, it's a Nocino.
It was. You made a Nocino way back when and
so,
forgot it.
I think that Joe and I gathered some walnuts. It was June of 2021 because as we talked about Nocino, was it last week? Right.
Yeah.
You have to pick the young walnuts in June. So obviously I look in the, you know, I poke around in the mixture and stir it up and there are the nut pieces. So it looks like I soaked the nuts in vodka. And also when I strained it off, it had some lemon peels in it. So it's been sitting for, 3 years? This is going to be a good Nocino.
Good.
So I strained it off. I think we'll add some maple syrup and we'll be drinking it at the Christmas dinner table or something like that.
Yeah, it's a real, well, it's lovely anytime, but it's a real wintry sort of taste. Mm-hmm. Oh. So here we go.
Surprise!
Always nice to look what's in the pantry. Yeah, I've been going through my freezer, too. And
There's stuff in there
There's stuff in there.
But vodka is a long preservation method, so I am not worried about this Nocino. It's going to be good.
Well, that's wonderful. Good. So, we talked about good stuff from the garden today. And good stuff from farmers markets and also ice cream. Remember, there's no such thing as too much. That refers to vegetables mainly.
Yeah, I can tell you about too much ice cream, okay? It has consequences.
It does. Good. So, also drying. I have a note here. My hot peppers are in. I like to grow the variety called Osileo, which is actually there's some other medium hot peppers.
Right, these are not super hot.
No, they're not.
These are Iowa hot, right?
Yeah, Iowa hot. It's a whole different thing as Iowa hot, but still they're a handy thing. And hot peppers dry well. You can put peppers in the freezer, but I like to dry them, and that is something you can pulverize and keep in a jar, and it works just fine. So that's good. So we talked about keeping your herbs kind of chunky and crunch them later. But peppers, a good thing to dry. That'll go in my food dryer soon. And matter of fact, maybe today will be a good day to do that. Go out and get... And Donna mentioned, too, that peppers do keep ripening on the counter. So,
right. You can pick them...
And I mean, don't pick them grass green. But right. If there's a little green on them yet, there is hope. If you have any worry about them staying in the garden, being sunburned or animal eaten.
Chewed on, right?
Yeah, or chewed on. They do ripen on the cut, as do tomatoes. So it is the season. It is the season. Well, we've got some upcoming things. Oh, the Iowa State Fair is starting soon. That's good.
And the weather is going to be good for the fair this year.
Oh, I'm so glad. Go out there and enjoy the fair. That'll be good. And tonight at KHOI Community Radio, there is a presentation. A film will be shown, Uranium Derby, by filmmaker Brittany Prater. It is about the production of uranium, or not the production, the testing of, and what went on.
And the radioactive waste that was buried around Ames.
So it's a bit of history that we all should know. Come and listen to Uranium Derby, KHOI, here at the station. So that'll be good for this evening. And... Oh, also coming up, mark your calendars for the first week in September for the KHOI book sale, because everyone loves books. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We come to you every Tuesday at noon, repeated 7 p.m. on this fine radio station, or we have a podcast too. We heard music by the Barn Owl Band, you heard Sugar Hill. Cold Frosty Morning, which is long ways off, but Cold Frosty Morning. And we'll go out with Salt Creek. My name is Lena Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
Excellent engineering by Mike Murphy. Eat good food and enjoy life.